episode 17 of the Tactical Breakdown Podcast. I had the opportunity to sit down with fellow podcaster and friend of the show, Garrett Tisla, who is the host of the Squad Room Podcast. You can check them out at thesquadroom.net. And today we're going to talk about being or becoming the one for your agency. It's Garrett's message. I'm excited that he gets a chance to share on our show. So let's jump right into it.
Welcome to the Tactical Breakdown, a podcast for law enforcement, military, and emergency response professionals.
Stand by.
Where we help you bridge the gap and talk training, tactics, and leadership with the best subject matter experts in the world. Here is your host, Adam Kanakin.
Hello and welcome back to the show. We are at episode 17 of the podcast. That's crazy. If you're a returning listener, welcome back. Thank you for being here, and I hope you're getting something actionable from the content we're putting out. If you're new to the podcast, welcome. Thank you for joining us at the Tactical Breakdown. And if you haven't already, make sure to subscribe to the podcast and leave a review. It really helps us, and it's going to help us grow this thing up as big as we possibly can. Today, I'm excited because I have a fellow podcaster on the show, and that's Garrett Tisla. Now, Garrett is the host of the Squad Room Podcast. He is a 15-year law enforcement veteran and a sergeant of a Southern California police agency. One of the things that you may not know about Garrett is that he has his master's in public administration, majoring in organizational leadership. So today, we're going to talk about his philosophy on becoming or being the one for your agency and what that means in terms of leadership. So if you're listening to this and you're in a leadership role within your agency or organization, this is going to be the show for you. Here we go. Cool. All right, Garrett, thanks for taking the time, man. I appreciate you jumping on and coming on to our show. The Squad Room is a fantastic podcast that I listen to on the daily. So thank you so much for putting that out there. For everybody here who doesn't know who you are, can you give us the quick background about who you are and what you do?
Sure. Well, first of all, Adam, thank you very much for having me on. I'm excited to be here, and I love what you're doing with your show and the purpose you've developed there. So my name is Garrett Tisla. I'm a sergeant for a sheriff's office in Southern California. I always avoid saying the actual name just to keep everything clean, you know, with social media policies and whatnot. But I work down in Southern California for an agency. Like I said, I'm a sergeant. I've been a sergeant for about 7 years now. We're not a large agency, so we all wear a lot of different hats, and I've gotten to do a lot of different stuff in the last almost 15 years now.
That's awesome, man. Well, first off, if I don't get to it later, and in case I forget, thank you so much for your service and what you do for your community.
No, I appreciate that.
Yeah, absolutely. One thing I wanted to talk about is when I listen to your show, and a lot of what you like getting into is talking about leadership in law enforcement and officer wellness and mindfulness and those types of things, mental health. And that's been a major focus for mine as well, for me as well. When we do our show, I've had a lot of guests on already that we talk about mental health and, you know, PTSD and things like that. So what are your, like, when you put your show together, what are your thoughts on that? Like, how big of a focus is that for you?
It's the entire focus of the show. You know, I started the Squad Room back in 2015 because I was struggling, and I was struggling with those things that happened to an officer after about 10 years on the job. And sometimes it's, for some guys, it's after 5 years, some guys it's after 15, but almost inevitably, some of those things start to creep into your life that if you don't address them, they become almost insurmountable. And it's a process, to be completely honest, that 5 years or 4 years later, I'm still dealing with and struggling with or trying to navigate through. But I was out looking for ways to lose weight, to sleep better, to manage the stress of shift work and the stress of patrol and the dynamics there, and how to I was just promoted to sergeant, and how to be a better leader to the people that I was responsible for and responsible to. And so I had a lot of questions, and I had more questions than answers. And I went out looking and reading, and I sort of developed this realization that as I learned something and I brought it back to my squads, you know, my team, and I would hold briefing topics on things like sleep maintenance and cardiovascular disease. And I had the weirdest briefing trainings of anyone in the department, because normally we talk about tactics and things that happened the shift before or people that had warrants. And I'm out there talking about how you need to get better sleep. But as I was going through those things and learning some of this, guys and girls kept coming up to me and saying, hey, I was wondering, or I've been struggling with that myself. I've been struggling with my sleep or my diet or what kind of exercise I should be doing. And I realized that I wasn't alone and that my partners were struggling with the same things. And then it really kind of inspired me to realize that, well, if we're struggling with these same things here in Southern California, I know other cops are struggling with them as well. And so the squadron became my way of having an excuse to talk to subject matter experts on those topics and giving them a platform so that I could basically steal their information from them, right? Steal their knowledge, steal an hour of their time to pick their brain, and then share it with people who I care so deeply about, which is, of course, my partners in law enforcement and the other first responder professions. So that was the calling of starting that show. And without a doubt, across the board, whether it's a listener in on the East Coast or in New Zealand or in Europe, we all struggle with these same things and we all need to know how to navigate through them.
You know, it's funny you say that, you know, that it's worldwide. It's not just for, you know, everybody thinks that, you know, when it's something's happening to you, it's happening to you and you're the only person. And it takes that, you know, that, I don't know if it's a moment of clarity, but everybody, or hopefully everybody gets that where it's like, you know what, I'm not alone in this anymore, you know, or I've never been alone. And when they start to realize that and start to realize that it's, you know, there's officers that are in your agency, in your community, whether it's in your city or your state or your country, there's people all around the world that are going through the exact same thing that you are. Mm-hmm. And there's resources out there now more so than ever to help people. And these podcasts, I mean, is we're that one little thing, that one little sliver of information, but there's a whole world of information now that's starting to flood in because people are starting to realize that these are real world issues, and that officer suicides and mental health has become a major talking point in society now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What do you go ahead?
No, I absolutely agree with you. And I think you're probably getting to the same point I was about to interrupt you with, was that in all those areas too, that idea of being alone is really prevalent when it comes to emotional trauma, you know, whether you call it PTS or emotional survival and developing that emotional intelligence to get through it. We so often we think we're alone, and that if we are struggling or we're going to treatment or we're going to a therapist, that none of our partners are doing the same thing. And that if we were to admit that we have trauma, that we would be outcast. And without a doubt, the thing that has been inspiring the most about my show is hearing from guys who are realizing that they're not alone, and that as a result, they've been empowered to go out and try and get help.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's awesome. I think that's probably the biggest thing for me as well is, you know, when I put the show together and I put it out there, and even though we're just new and getting started here, it's even getting the feedback, getting emails, messages on social media, being like, hey man, really appreciate what you're doing. You know, it's, you know, I listened to this episode with so-and-so and it really made me think about things differently. Mm-hmm. I could be doing this for another 10, 15, 20 years. And if it helps one person, then to me, it's worth it. Cause I personally, like, I just enjoy, I don't know if it's selfish for me, but I just enjoy being able to get on the phone or sit down with somebody who I admire, I respect, or I'm interested in speaking with. And like you said, just picking their brain for an hour. It's one of those really cool things that we have the opportunity to do.
It's an absolute privilege to have the show at this point. Yeah. And you'll find that as you go, and you already have, but you know, you have the ability to get to people who know things you'll never know if you don't talk to them. And to have an hour of time with someone like, you know, for example, for me, Lieutenant Colonel Dave Grossman or Andy Stumpf or the guy I just had on, a guy who was a POW in Vietnam for 5.5 years, Charlie Plum. Those are unique experiences that have expanded my own, you know, my own life and my own life skills. And it's been amazing. It's a gift to be able to do it.
Speaking of people that I was inspired to speak with, obviously you're one of them, and that's why I have you on the show. You have this awesome message in your podcast and on your platform that you talk about being the one. Mm. Can you share with our listeners what that is and why it's so important?
It's a quote, or it's part of a quote, but it's a call to action. And I got to give full credit to my friend Greg Amundsen, who was the first one to share it with me. But it comes from philosopher Heraclitus, and he's talking about the army. And obviously this is back in his day, but he's describing this, the kind of person that makes up the army. And this is the Greek army at the time. And he says, out of every 100 men, 10 shouldn't even be there. 80 are just targets. 9 are the real fighters, and we are lucky to have them, for they make the battle. Ah, but the one is a true warrior, and he will be the one to bring the others back. And I just love that quote. And I think it exemplifies the position that law enforcement or the first responders have within our communities. You know, we are the one out of 100. It literally is about a 1% chance of someone who applies to become a law enforcement officer, at least in California, about 1% chance of actually getting through the entire process and getting into a black and white patrol car and actually being a cop. So even the math checks out on that quote from hundreds of years ago that, you know, so it's a call to action for every officer to be the one to bring the others back. And what I mean by bringing the others back is just to lead by example and to always consider yourself as the person who has an obligation based on your oath to lead like that. And I think it applies also within our own agencies. You know, anyone who's been a cop for more than a couple of days can pick out the 10 people at their agency that shouldn't even be there, right? And then the 80 that are just kind of going along, waiting for retirement. And then the 9 who are the top tier, good, hardworking officers. But more than that, my goal is to make every listener be the one within their agency who steps up and who leads and who has the knowledge, skills, and abilities to go out and change the culture of their own agency.
Where do you think that starting point is? If you had to, maybe it's brought just one point, maybe there's a couple, but where do you think if there's, you know, officers, people, they could be new recruits, so they could be, you know, junior officers, or they could be, you know, senior NCOs or anywhere in between. If they're looking to become that one person that you speak to, where is that starting point? What do you think?
It's the starting point is the hardest point. It's the absolute hardest point of this. And it's the one that we have to anticipate that we go back to several times because we're not going to get it right all the time, but it starts with ourselves. It starts with taking ownership and leadership of yourself first and identifying what I call are the badges. But what are your, it's an acronym, but what are your beliefs, actions, discipline, goals, your emotions, in terms of how are you going to deal with your emotions, and the service? What's your legacy and what's your purpose for being there? And going through those things and making sure that your beliefs and actions are in alignment and that you're instilling in yourself the discipline to make sure that they're in alignment, but also that you have goals and a path forward so that you know where you're going, you know where you're coming from, and you know where you're going. And then your emotions, like I said, how do you deal with them? How are you going to deal with the things that have happened in the past and develop a plan of action for the future? And then your legacy, your service. And to me, and this is what I talk about on my show with badges, is that is a framework I use for myself that I develop. But it's a framework for myself to evaluate my own self-awareness. And if those things are all in alignment, I am firing on all cylinders and I can start to go out and move into leading other people. When those things are out of alignment, even just a little bit, I notice that I start to fall back and I step back and I don't take the opportunities to be the one. And So it's a kind of a constant reminder that we always have to work on ourselves first before we can work on other people. But we get through that first step. We got to develop self-awareness and then a plan of action to make sure our beliefs and actions are in alignment. And then we go out with our goal and we think, okay, what kind of impact do I want to make on my agency? Do I want to be the best patrol sergeant out there? Do I want to be the best line officer? Do I want to be the best narc cop? And by best, there's different versions of best too. So best doesn't always mean statistics only. It could mean I want to be the best teacher, the best support system, the best, it could be a myriad of different things, but we have to have an understanding of where we're going.
I think that's a great point, is that realizing that, you know, how we say like, well, be the one out of 100, you have to understand that that presents itself in many different facets. So, you know, there's going to be that one guy that's on the special response team. So SWAT or ERT or whatever it is. And if that's not you, then that's okay. Maybe you want to be the best dispatcher in your agency. Like that's where you want to get to. And it's setting those realistic goals for yourself so that you have there is the opportunity for you to reach them. Is that something that you guys try to bring out in people? Is that realizing that it's not one size fits all anymore?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And an important point in that too, is that my goal is to create agencies of the one, where you have in 1,000 officers, you have 1,000 people all being the one in their own way.
Yeah. I love that.
We can lead others by being led as well. And there's no shame or hardship in surrounding yourself by other leaders. So this idea that that you're the one and only, that's not the way I mean that. By being the one, you be the one for yourself, and then you can go out and rise to the occasions that need to be happening. The most amazing thing about this career, there's a lot of amazing things, but one of the most amazing things is that you just touched on it. We need cops who are hardcore SWAT operators and who know tactics and are aggressive and can do that job. And the pendulum swings all the way over to the other side, where we need school resource officers who can connect with troubled juveniles and who can be creative in their problem solving. And we need every kind of cop in between. And oftentimes the job requires both sides of that spectrum to be within one person. You know, small agencies especially, you got to be both of those. And so it requires different skills. We're not all going to be great SWAT cops. We're not all going to be great SROs. I'd make a horrible SRO. I don't have the patience to deal with like troubled 12, 13, 14 year old kids, right? But I know that about myself. So that is not, though I try to work on that and I try to work on my patience and those sorts of things with it, I am not called to that part of the service, but someone else is, and they're great at it. And it's an amazing job when you consider the spectrum that is required of us.
I wanted to ask you when we first started talking, because you're over, what episode are you guys on now? You're over 100, right? 100 and...
Yeah, I think as we talk right now, I've released 108 episodes.
That's awesome. And you've been doing this since 2015. What, has there been a guest or guests that you've had on your show that were, it was kind of almost so profound speaking to them and their message was so important that you've kind of come back to it over and over and over again?
Yeah, a lot. You know, in 108 episodes, that's a lot of hours of recording. That's roughly 108 hours of conversations with people. And then the follow-up conversations that I've had as a result, there's a lot, man. And not to pitch the most recent show, but really episode 107, which is, I just mentioned him earlier, Charlie Plum. He was captain in the U.S. Navy. He was a F-4 Phantom pilot. And on his 75th mission over Vietnam, 5 days before he's set to go home, he gets shot down and he's housed at the Hanoi Hilton POW camp, where he shares cells with people like John McCain and Admiral Stockdale. And he does 5.5 years in this 8x8 little cell, you know, and he's tortured daily. And, what was amazing about him is his resilience. How he left that with a strong sense of self and purpose, and how it really didn't, he's thankful for the opportunity, as weird as that sounds. And he has a saying, adversity is a terrible thing to waste. And, you know, now it's 50 years later. And I was just so struck by him. and his, the power of his personality. Really amazing. Other guys, another one that I came back to, another Navy guy. I don't have a whole lot of military guys, but this, Clint Bruce, he's a lieutenant in the SEAL teams, and his style of leadership and his, just his beliefs there. I listen to that episode every so often when I feel like I need a reset. And then, you know, I have a lot of episodes with a friend of mine, Traver Bohm, who's, for lack of a better term, a life coach, but we kind of started the show together, and then he went through some horrible, horrible things in his personal life and had to go off and find himself, for lack of another better term. But he is such a profound person to me too, and I'm lucky to call him a friend, and he's been on, like, I don't know, probably 12 to 15 episodes. So those conversations are always impactful for me. Yeah, but there's lots of guests and guests who've always really, you know, even if it's just a nugget of something that's really, there's a lot that sticks with me though.
Yeah. It's interesting. When I listen to your podcast and things like that, it always seems like as you know, somebody, a guest will come on and they'll be telling a story. And usually it's one of those like, oh shit, like this is real. Like this guy went through some shit. And there's always a positive outlook at the end of it. There's always something positive that comes from it. What do you think is the first step in turning something positive when something bad happens?
Man, that's a great question, and one that has filled shelves and shelves of bookstores in the self-development section. You know, the first thing we do, and this is what I try to teach myself and teach my kids, is we have to be ready before it happens by having the mindset of, just like Charlie said to me, adversity is a terrible thing to waste. And the best thing we can do is to have a strong sense of understanding what we can and cannot control. And if we cannot control something, then it really becomes a waste of time to worry about it. And if we can control something, then we have two options. And this is something that I struggle with on the daily, is, okay, I can control what I'm feeling, what I'm thinking, what I'm experiencing, what my reaction is to this negative input, right? I can control it, or do I ignore it? And if, of course, if I ignore it, it gets worse and worse. But if I can control it and do something about it, then I've taken ownership of it, and I've made the steps. I have changed the outcome as best I can. But learning to get rid of the idea that we have to control everything, because that's impossible, I think that's key.
Mm-hmm. No, absolutely. I think too, one of the, you know, I've spoken to a lot of people, and even in my own personal life, when I'm going through things like we are right now, we have a lot of stuff going on with family members.
Mm-hmm.
Something that people keep bringing up with me is just resiliency, in the fact that you don't realize it at the time when it's happening, when all these bad things are happening to you throughout your life, that you're actually building up a resiliency and a capability of dealing with these situations every time they come up. And it was kind of profound to me when I sat down with a gentleman this morning, and we just went for coffee and met up, and he has a podcast called Cut the Crap. He sat there and I had this like epiphany moment with him just today, and he was like, you don't realize you've built up this resilience through your career, through all these incidents, when you deal with traumatic events and all these experiences, and, you know, when you're in the forces and all that stuff that's ingrained into you, and then dealing with those hard situations and those hard times, it's prepared you for what's coming up next. It's preparing you for what's coming up right now and what's coming up down the road. And I think that's, from everybody that I've spoken to on my podcast so far, that seems to be that overriding thing. It's, you're better for your experiences. And it's almost always like that. I don't know. What are your thoughts?
Yeah. You know, I think there's often a misunderstanding that when something happens to us, we talk in a way, and I'm big on talk, self-talk, what we say, our words are our thoughts, and those things become our beliefs. Right. And, I don't like this idea that when we experience something, we consider this idea of bouncing back, or getting back to normal. And we need to dismiss that as incorrect, because you're not going to be the same. You have now, you, just like you said, you now have a new experience that you've incorporated into your life. It is added to your to your bank of memories and recollections on how to manage or how to not manage something that has occurred in the past, right? And you've learned from it. So the idea is to come back stronger and better. And it sounds like a cliche, but it really is true. You know, there's a saying, and I forget who said it, but there's a saying like, no man crosses the same stream twice. And the meaning, the purpose, you know, the idea behind that is when you cross a stream, the water passes, the pebbles pass, the sand passes. And when you cross it again, it's a different, there, it might be minuscule, but there are changes that have been made. And I think that's the way with our lives on a day-to-day basis even. And yeah, you incorporate what you've learned. And if you aren't incorporating what you've learned, you're just making the same mistake over and over again. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's kind of one of those things. I mean, I'm excited when I get a chance to speak with people, and even going into things like, you know, going and speaking with somebody like a professional about your, like, you know, maybe you're having a really rough week and you're just like, okay, I just need somebody to vent to. Those are things that I think everybody needs to realize that it's, you know, it's not as taboo as it used to be. You know, it's everybody goes, oh, I don't want to go speak to the shrink, you know, as a whole in this profession. I think people are starting to realize that it's not as bad as you think everybody used to think it was. It's a good thing now. And people are getting the chance to utilize these skills that were blocked off to them before, whether it be a personal mindset or, you know, a social construct of the way that law enforcement and military and first response was built up, where everyone's like, you're supposed to be the tough guy, just suck it up and move on. It's not like that anymore. And there's so many more doors open now. And I think people are starting to realize there's ways to take all this bad shit and turn it into a positive for yourself. So anyways, I wanted to ask your thoughts on that, because I know that that's something that you focus on a lot with your show. And thank you for sharing that with us as well.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I think it's getting better. We haven't turned the tide all the way yet. We still have a lot of work to do with reducing that stigma. It's better in some places than others. Canada is actually very progressive in how they're treating their officers in general, and the efforts that they're making for wellness programs. You know, in California, we're pretty good. Some agencies are a lot better than most. Others are still pretty, you know, they're behind by 20 years. I worry and I fret about my partners in southern agencies in the southern states. And I can't speak to Europe and Australia. Australia is pretty good, actually. I know for a fact Australia is really good. We have a guest and friend, Sean Gorman, down there, who's doing a lot of, he's an ex-cop and doing a lot of wellness stuff down there. But I worry about some states and that stigma still progressing. And yeah, we talk about it a lot on my show. And it is moving better. Richard Gerling, who's a lieutenant in Oregon, he has he's just retired to go do this full time and teach mindfulness and resilience training to law enforcement. And he retired because he's now, his schedule's booked. He can do this full time. And it's amazing that there's a demand out there for someone like him to go do these things. Mm-hmm. And he's an amazing person. The challenge, I got an email just yesterday from a listener who said that it was, me talking about it and talking about my own, me navigating my own steps towards counseling and therapy that got him, with the encouragement of his wife, got him to finally accept the idea of needing to go to treatment. And that's amazing. You know? So if it means that I stick my neck out there and talk about my own experience, then I'll do it. If it means that it gets someone into treatment or into counseling. And we need to get rid of this idea that you're broken. This job is demanding and challenging. And whether you're a small town cop or a major city cop, we all experience the same things, maybe just in different frequencies, but we all deal with the gnarly things that stick with you. And if you don't think they're sticking with you, you're wrong. Now, I don't mean that you're not dealing with it, but we carry those things just like we were talking about a minute ago. We carry those experiences with us. And if you don't have a proper way of off-gassing that experience and processing it, it will come back to get you. And I'm of the belief that I'm not worried about the cop that goes to therapy. I'm worried about the cop that won't go to therapy. That to me is the paradigm shift that needs to happen.
I should have prefaced my previous comment there about things getting better. My experience, obviously, because I am up here in Canada, so that has been over the last couple of years, that has been the experience up here that I've noticed. But you're absolutely right. Things are different everywhere in the world. So I can't speak to the way it is in the US, and depends if you're north, south, east, west. I can't speak to that. So thank you for clarifying that.
Well, it's just interesting. Yeah. It's just interesting because there's such a change, you know, from west to east coast in everything around policing, like just different tactics are used. The agencies are set up differently. There's different, methods to things. So some of it makes sense. But I'm not trying to slight Southern agencies at all. I just know that in terms of everything else around policing, and I'm coming out of California, right? So there's already a lot of haters on that. I just know because I talk to people in the South whose agencies struggle to accept this.
And a lot of it's geopolitical, right? I mean, yep. I don't know the US landscape as well as I know Canadian landscape, but I know like where you are in California is a lot more left wing, and then as you get down south, it goes farther and farther right. So, and those political divides seem to dictate a lot of mindset and how people view these types of situations. And I'm not this isn't a political podcast. I don't get into that, or you don't need to share your thoughts on that. But it was something interesting for me for sure. And now having the chance to speak with people that are all around the world, you do get these different viewpoints, and they say like, the way it is where you are, but where I am, it's completely different, and here's why. And I think that's fascinating because with the platforms that you and I have with these podcasts, I'm in central Canada and you're in California, right on the west coast of the United States, and where people can be listening all around the world and getting all these different inputs from all these different people. And I think that's awesome.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And it's been it's so cool to get an email from someone again, like New Zealand or England or Canada, and see how similar the job is and how similar the struggles are, regardless of what uniform we wear or the accent we have, or the challenge is always there.
I want to get your thoughts on something because I know you and I both focus a lot on leadership. Do you think there is a responsibility for leaders now? Us being on media and being out there for everyone, but also for leaders in agencies, whether it be FTOs or sergeants or officers, like senior officers, do you think there's a responsibility for them to share their thoughts, their feelings, and their stories to start bridging that gap on this mental health issue?
Wow, that's a good question, man. That's a big question. I don't know if I would go so far as to say it's an obligation. I feel like it's my obligation, and that's why I'm doing what I'm doing. I don't know if I'd be comfortable putting that on someone else just by the sake of their rank or their position. I would say, though, that leadership entails doing the kinds of things that create an environment where your people can be successful. Right. And the advice I got when I got promoted, like almost everyone gets, is just take care of your people. Like, well, what does that mean? You know, does it mean, cover for them, let them do a crappy job so that they don't get in trouble? Like, no, that's not what it means. And, doesn't mean to micromanage them either. It means to create an environment where they can be successful. And I think that some of the ways we do that is obviously we already do through sharing our training and experience. You know, there's nothing unusual about an officer sharing how to do a search of a vehicle, right? Or how to do a domestic violence interview. None of those things are unique, but we need to be willing to share our stories of our challenges too. And again, it goes to helping, like we talked about at the beginning of the show, it goes to helping your partners realize that they're not alone, that they're experiencing something that has been experienced before. So I would love to say that it's an obligation, but it is challenging. We all have to get there on our own. You know, because it requires a lot of emotional strength. It really does. You know, mm-hmm. I hemmed and hawed about talking about therapy for a long time, even though I had had a dozen episodes on it and with different police psychologists. I always kept myself out of it. And so even for me, it was a struggle to get there. That's a challenge. It really is. And I know I didn't really answer your question there.
It's all good. I mean, cause I wanted to find a way to cycle into this because there's a book that I always think of when I think about leadership, and it's Extreme Ownership mm-hmm. by Jocko. And I know you've probably read it. Cause one of the things that you and I think we both have in common is we both enjoy, reading and learning and being like lifelong learners.
Absolutely.
I want to get into that too. But it was kind of one of those things. Cause I remember listening to a TEDx that Jocko did and talking about that book and the extreme ownership of being a leader. And I remember going through our officer training with Canadian Forces, how it was always almost like there's going to be stuff that comes up where you're not going to like what you have to do, but it's your job to do it because you have a responsibility to the men and women under your command. Mm-hmm. I see this as kind of the 2019 version of that, because for example, for us in the Canadian Forces, I mean, we're not at war, mm-hmm. let's say. So there's always in those down times, there's always, okay, where do we put our focus now? And mental health is the new buzzword. It's the new thing. It's what everybody is focusing on, and it's uncomfortable and it sucks. And it's one of those things that people, even if you're comfortable talking about it, you're not comfortable talking about it because you have to let, you know what I'm saying? You have to let people in you have to be vulnerable. And it flies right in the face of everything that we've told our soldiers and our officers and our first responders to this date, where we're saying, listen, you have to be tough as nails. This is your job. You're supposed to be a hard charger. Oh, now we're done. Now we want you to let everybody in and be emotional and be vulnerable. And it's the exact opposite. And it's a super difficult thing to navigate. And it's something that I obviously don't have the answer to it. That's why I always ask everybody every time I get a chance, because I'm like, maybe there's somebody has that spark of wisdom that can help everybody out. But it's such a difficult topic to always talk about. So no, I understand that you can't, you don't have an answer, and that's fine, because I don't either. It's just, I always want to see where people stand on that issue.
It's going to take people talking about it. And then really, it's really, really going to take our leaders, our chiefs and our sheriffs and our commissioners, those kinds of people, to disseminate out the priority of it. Because if it's not a priority to our command staff, it's just not a priority. And officers need to know that they're supported, that, you know, they're not going to get their badge and gun taken just by going to a counselor. And they need to feel confident in their agency that they're going to back them up. And that seems to be one of the biggest challenges. You know, it's convincing the individual officer that they need treatment is not that hard. I think, you know, people are open to it more and more, and they're willing to recognize, okay, I'm not sleeping, I'm drinking a lot, I'm, you know, struggling with these ideas, I'm having recurring thoughts, what's wrong? So on an individual officer, I think it's easy to convince them. But oftentimes, when you look at it department wide, it takes a tragedy, a suicide or an on-duty death, that sort of thing, to shake them out of the complacency of it. Because it's much easier for command staff to pretend the problem doesn't exist than to actually address it and address it in a way that's holistic and authentic.
I do want to get back into real quick is I talked a little bit about books and reading and leadership. If you had I'm sure you have a list somewhere of kind of your top 10, top 5 books. If there were some books right now that you would recommend to our listeners, what would they be and why?
Well, you just mentioned one, Extreme Ownership. I think that book obviously hit the scene pretty hard. I read it when it first came out and after hearing him on the Tim Ferriss podcast. And so that's a great one. Another book on the same topics we've just been talking about, actually an old teammate of Jocko's, but it's called Resilience by Eric Greitens. And his other book, The Heart and the Fist. Those two books by Eric Greitens are just fantastic. And Resilience is talks about exactly that. But The Heart and the Fist was a really influential book for me early in my career about his story. And his story is incredible. I mean, he was a Rhodes Scholar. He was a humanitarian, and he was out, you know, in like Africa working in refugee camps, and then realized there was nobody there to defend them, the refugees. And so he went off and joined the Navy SEALs. And so those two books are very great. The Heart and the Fist and Resilience. You know, I get a little out there sometimes, and I mean, I have a serious Amazon addiction, and I'm looking at a bunch of books right now. But you know, another book, Being Mortal by Atul Gawande, really is it's about death and dying, which is he's a doctor, and it's a really fascinating look though at the process of death, and we deal with it so much in our job that it's really been enlightening to me to see it. And then all the ways that we manage it and deal with it. And as a society, I don't mean just in law enforcement. Mm-hmm. You know, then there's, I read a lot of like Pema Chodron, who's a Buddhist monk, and find her stuff fascinating. And a book that I would recommend anybody get, a couple books, anything by Ryan Holiday. Stoicism has been, I'd say, a guiding light for me over the last 5 years. And I'm still an amateur when it comes to trying to implement Stoicism in my life. But anything by Ryan Holiday, such as Ego is the Enemy, or The Obstacle is the Way, or a book that I read daily called The Daily Stoic, those are all really impactful books, and they're amazing. And then from that, I would also encourage people to read the book Meditations, and that's by Marcus Aurelius. So that book's hundreds of years old. He was a Roman emperor, and it's his personal diary. And it's written in a way of a diary, written to himself, reminders to himself. But it's really a powerful read.
I'm so happy that you brought those books up. I think the most important thing for leaders, for instructors and educators and trainers to start realizing is that reading stuff that's outside of your wheelhouse is kind of where those doors start opening for you. I've always been that way. It always takes, you know, somebody will reference something that's completely obscure and you dive into it and you're like, holy crap. I mean, sure, maybe 90% of this isn't applicable, but that 10% that there is like a light bulb moment and you're like, I can apply this in what I'm doing. Even though it has nothing to do with my profession right now, I can find a way to work that into my life and to what I do and how I live.
You know, one of the biggest impacts on my career, and it was even something I ended up using in a TED talk, was something I read by Pema Chodron, who I said is that Buddhist monk, right? And you wouldn't think that anything about Buddhism relates to being in law enforcement, but I learned through her writings of a practice called loving kindness. And it sounds as Buddhist and hippie as it is, but it really was something that I read about. And then weeks later was in a situation where I thought, oh, this has actually changed my entire perspective of how I deal with people on the street. And basically having compassion at the forefront of your mind while you're dealing with people and understanding that everyone is struggling, you know? So yeah, if you're just reading, you know, SEAL Team 6 books and stuff like that, they're cool. I like to read them too, but you're not pushing your limits. Push your limits and read something that's going to make you uncomfortable.
I'm a nonfiction guy. I don't think there's any book that I've written or read, sorry, that's a fiction-based book. It at least has to have some part of truth to it. Actually, there was is interesting. I know you've also had him on, I guess, as your show. Mr. J. Dobbins wrote a book called No Angel, Operation Black Biscuit and their infiltration, ATF's infiltration of the Hell's Angels.
Amazing,
Well, here's the thing. I told him, I said, there's been very few books in my life that I've found to be the perfect mix between entertainment and fact and truth. And I think that's one of them. I mean, it's obviously there's stuff that there's liberties taken for the sake of putting the book together. But it's for the most part, that stuff's actually happened, you know, and it allows you to invest yourself in the story that much more and to pull more information and knowledge out of it because it was put together the way it was. So that's another book that I really love for anybody who doesn't want to sit down and, you know, read things that are on philosophy and stuff like that. That's more of an entertaining type book, but
Jay's book is great. I'm the same way. I don't read fiction. There's too much interesting stuff happening in the real world to me. Jay's book is great. And then Under and Alone by Billy Queen. That's another one where they infiltrate the Mongols. And that's an amazing book too. So I like those too. I read those too. And, you know, and I it blows my mind that a guy like Jay did what he did, you know?
Right. That's what I said. Yeah. You're a little left to center there, big guy.
Like, yeah.
He's a very interesting dude.
Yeah.
Before I let you go, Garrett, is there anything that you want to share with our listeners? Something that maybe you share with your listeners, on the daily, tips, tricks, or anything like that for them that's actionable that they can take with them when they're on the job?
You know, the thing that I'm trying to work on right now is developing a morning routine. And I'm lucky now that I'm in a desk assignment, because it's normalized so much of the job that is so abnormal. So it's tough when you're working rotating shifts and your sleep schedule is all thrown off. But developing some sort of consistency in your daily habits, I think, is key. And it is something I have failed at for years, but I'm working towards. And it usually, I think, needs to involve some sort of self-reflection, whether that's journaling or meditation or just sitting with a cup of coffee and trying to do a checklist on yourself and see where you're at. And then, you know, getting ready to plan the day. For me, planning is a big part of my success. If I plan my day, if I know what my goals are for the day, and I give myself, and I don't overload myself, I give myself like 3 goals that I try to hit, and then an evaluation of what I'm grateful for. And, at the end of the day, kind of reviewing the goals that I meet them, what were my challenges? And then at the end of the day, what am I grateful for? Those gratitude practices are really important and becoming more and more important to me every day. Obviously I think physical fitness is a key thing, and that's where I struggle the most. And I think the thing, if I leave your listeners with one idea, it's that wherever you are in your own journey, whether you're there's a very good chance you're not where you want to be, right? Very few of us are where we want to be. And that's okay. It's okay to not be where you want to be. The challenge becomes for us is what we're going to do about it. And so if we can just be one day stronger in some way, you know, 1% better, in some way, in an actionable way, then we're making progress. And be grateful for the progress. Be grateful for being able to do it. And try to put yourself into situations where every day you're 1% better, and eventually we will attain the goals that we're trying to achieve.
I love that. And I'm just going to leave it at that. I think that's a fantastic message. If somebody is listening to this and they want to hear more from you and hear more about your guests and all that kind of stuff, where can they find the podcast? Where can they get a hold of you?
Absolutely. Yeah. Thanks for the opportunity. So the podcast is called The Squad Room. You know, some countries or agencies call it the briefing room or the training room. For us, it's called The Squad Room. It's where people get together and before shift and at the end of shift to share ideas and tips and tactics and briefings. So that's why the name is The Squad Room. It's my place to share ideas. They can go to thesquadroom.net and check out old episodes. We're on every podcast platform out there, so they can search their podcast player and they should be able to find us. They can email me, Garrett, 2 R's, 2 T's at thesquadroom.net if they want to check, shoot me an email. Socials is at The Squad Room for both Instagram and Twitter. We have a Facebook group they can join. Just search The Squad Room group in Facebook. And if they really want to hear me talk, you can go to YouTube and search my name and TEDx Talk, Garrett Teslaa, TESLAA, TEDx Talk. And they'll see a TED Talk I did last year on the importance of working with civilian responders to natural disasters and emergencies.
Garrett, thank you so much, man, for taking the time and joining us on our show. I wish you all the best and best of luck with your show. Hopefully we get to connect again soon.
Adam, thank you for the opportunity, man. Had a lot of fun talking with you today. So thank you. And you're doing great work.
Thanks, man. I appreciate it. We'll talk to you later.
Thanks again for joining us on this episode of the Tactical Breakdown. To learn more about Garrett and the Squad Room podcast, you can visit thebreakdown.ca/017 or thesquadroom.net. Coming up before Christmas, I have three more episodes for you. Make sure to subscribe to the podcast. Go to thebreakdown.ca/subscribe. You can get us on your favorite podcast player. Doesn't matter if you're an Apple, Android, if you like Spotify, iHeart, whatever. We're available wherever you like to listen to podcasts. So make sure to do that. Rate and review the show. And we'll see you next time on the Tactical Breakdown. Stay safe.